Welcome back to On the Record, the podcast for all employees of Axel Springer. Here, leading voices from our transatlantic media company discuss what moves us today and what will move us in the future. My name is Adeep Sasani. I'm Global Head of Communications. And today we're presenting the second of three parts of a very special episode. We brought together the CEOs of our four largest media brands in Axel Springer, Politico's Goli Shikol Islami, Veld's Caroline Hulshofpur, Business Insider's Barbara Peng, and Bild's Claudius Senst. In this episode, we're going to discuss the hard times that media is facing at the moment. What are the greatest challenges on both sides of the Atlantic? We'll try to answer those questions, so thank you for tuning in. In the second part, I'd really like to discuss the broader challenges to the media world on both sides of the Atlantic a little bit. I mean, we've gone through a constant disruption of the media world, both with, you know, digitalization first, which a lot of our brands, or all of our brands, were winners of, I would argue, but also separately, the credibility of media is a big issue. The sort of economics of media have changed significantly over the years. So I'd really like to, this time, Goli, start with you, given that Politico has a significant business, both in the US, obviously, but also in Europe, being in Brussels, being in London, Paris, Berlin. Do you see differences in the challenges that I just described for others on both sides of the Atlantic, or are we all dealing with the same challenges today and over the last years?
Yeah, I mean, I would say we're all dealing with the same challenges. I don't think, you know, from the perspective of the economic models to support, you know, journalism, you know, I actually would say, and I may be wrong in this, but my sense is actually in the US, the local news ecosystem has been completely decimated. I don't get the sense that it is as grave here in Europe, that there is a more vibrant local news culture. And I think the US is suffering because there are fewer and fewer sources of information for communities. But other than that, I actually think as a media company or as a journalism company, I think we are all really dealing with the same challenges, whether it's in the US or in Europe.
Claudius, can I ask you, on the back of what Goli just said, do you think Europe is just lagging behind in the sort of trends that, for example, that she was describing, local news being decimated? I think from a European perspective, probably most people would say, yeah, local news has also been decimated. Maybe not to the degree that it's in the US, but in a lot of ways, I feel like Europe is always like right behind the US when it comes to these developments and trends. Would you agree with that?
A very short answer. I mean, like, you described it perfectly what I thought when I heard you saying that, like, the situation with regards to local news in the United States, because I sadly, and I need to be careful not because I don't mean it in a negative way from a competitive point of view, but I think for society, we are facing a tremendous problem here that trusted sources of information die. And the complexity of that is probably something which we are seeing to a more pronounced degree in the United States already, though that lag is also a very small lag even. And so we as an industry need to find an answer for that. Not so much for us as an industry only, but for us as like societies. And therefore it is a tremendously important question, and I think it's probably the question for us for the years to come. How can we build a multi-voice news journalistic ecosystem in all the markets, in all geographies? Because without functioning journalism, like, democracies are probably at risk in a very, very meaningful way.
Can I just add one quick thing?
Please.
Because because I also think, you know, to the point of, you know, this is really a grave danger, and that I think the polarization in America, I think the death of local news organizations is a contributor to that polarization. Because when you're only left with national politics, and it's national politics is much more about ideology, local is about the pothole in your street and your school, and whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, everyone wants their children to go to a good school and they want their roads to function. And so we, you know, we've lost that sense of community that local news brings in terms of we all share the same challenges. And with national politics, we all go to our corners. And that, I think, is another, you know, that to me is the Absolutely. What has happened and the biggest danger.
But by the way, just one addition, and now it sounds a little bit like a book club recommendation, but in same as ever, there's one chapter on exactly that. And like when I read it, I've never thought it about that way, because what they describe there is that also like the perception that the world is becoming more and more grave, or that the situation is becoming worse, is a perception which is very much driven by the fact that 50, 100 years ago, journalism was defined by local journalism. And by definition, a journalist in a regional setup was forced to report on what's happening around him or her. And by definition and by probability, the probability that horrible event is happening in your 50 kilometer radius is very, very limited. Mm-hmm. And that was the same 50 or 100 years ago. And it's pretty much the same today.
Yeah.
Though in today's world, with the flow of information, which is a global one, the perception is that like on an ongoing basis, horrible things are happening. And it's not even that there's more reporting on it in theory, but it's just like in practice that the information is traveling faster and more globally. And so therefore, I think the impact of local journalism cannot be overstated, and therefore it is such a critical projection or road we're on here.
Barbara, you know, given the purely digital approach at Business Insider, a lot of what Claudius said, speed of information, speed of the question of relevance for individuals on a local basis, on a regional basis, versus a national or an international basis, is something that I'm sure the newsroom at Business Insider deals with as any other responsible newsroom would. But how do you ensure, as a digital media outlet, international as it is, that you're trustworthy, you're working towards being a trustworthy news outlet beyond ensuring that the stories that the newsroom reports are correct? And, you know, so that part is a given. But how do you ensure that as an organization?
It's a great question. So I first want to say, you know, we all came from the Leadership Summit, which was wonderful. And we talked a lot about kind of pillars of democracy, which very much news, journalism, the truth is a core pillar of that. And Matthias opened with saying that the media and journalists are the second least trusted source out there behind politicians.
And CEOs.
And CEOs.
Yeah, yeah, to make it a successful podcast. Yeah.
I'm glad you're
listening to the podcast. Truth matters.
Oh, gosh. So there was a recent YouGov survey that highly rated Business Insider as one of the most trusted large news publications in the U.S., and also that we're trusted across party lines, more so than any other. And I think just pulling back our first part of our conversation, very proud of that, because you build trust over time, being consistent and what have you. But it's even harder now because, you know, when you think about misinformation, it is amplified in so many ways and getting so much more airtime than it ever would have before digital, which is problematic. And when you look ahead, I mean, what's another topic we talked a ton about this week is AI and the capabilities, which are just incredible. But when you start looking at some of the applications that are coming up here, what is AI able to do? It doesn't matter your form factor. You have a piece of information. You can translate that to video, audio, text, images, some combination of all of that. So now, not only is there more information than ever right now available to everybody, but that's going to be exponentially greater in the very near future. We're not talking 5 years out. We're not talking 10 years out, like very, very soon. So I will go even further to say that we have a huge responsibility right now to figure this out, that democracy is at stake and at risk in all of this. And it kind of puts a whole other importance on that idea of how do we break through? How do we reach people? How do we, you know, put a weight on facts? and, you know, solid reporting and what have you. So it's something that when you take a step back, you realize the importance of our missions here in the greater scheme of things.
I mean, trust is obviously paramount for what we do as media companies. Something that we didn't touch on too much, Goldie, I think you did mention it briefly, is polarization and the recent years that has really sort of gone through the roof tremendously, again, on both sides of the Atlantic. Now, there's a causality, maybe, or at least a correlation between polarization and the lacking trust in media. Carol, is there, from your perspective, is there a way back from where we are today, given the landscape, given the speed, the digital nature, almost a democratization in a negative way of distribution of information, a way back from polarization, regardless of what we do as media brands?
Okay, so in general, I'm skeptical. I mean, is there a way back? Because way backs, I don't believe in way backs. So we have to look forward, I guess. But I really think there are, so what is important for us as media brands is to stick to our standards in reporting, our standards in what is a source, how many sources do you need, and all that. I think what we maybe missed out a bit as an industry is to make clear what is the difference between content creators and journalism. What is the difference between reporters reporting on things? So, and I mean, to produce content and to be creative is something anyone can be. And all these new tools that are already there or upcoming makes the mass of content and entertaining content massive. I mean, it will be overwhelming, absolutely. And so the importance for us is to figure out how can we, by using these virtual reality tools, to use all that tools to stick to our standards, but make that as attractive as possible to use so that it's clear, okay, I really like to use that brand, that source. And I think that's the right way to handle it. I mean, what we need to do as a journalistic brand is not that we have to tell people what is wrong or right, but we have to give them the chance to decide for trusted information. And so I think that is what we need to do, to make clear how we work, to make clear what is our standard, to deliver that, and to make transparent what others are not doing. And so make clear that that might be worth to pay for, what is important for us to drive our business. So, and I think we had could invested more in that in the past, but past is gone. So that's what we need to do now, a bit more and faster than we had done before.
Does that also mean that media companies should be very much open to new platforms? We discussed sort of before that we need to be where the audiences are and give them the information that they need. So should we follow the audiences to whatever platform they go to next?
I have a very clear view on that, and that is absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I think one of the big assets for Bild, for example, is that we're probably the only remaining non-social media platform in Germany. What do I mean by that? We have a destination site, a destination product where people come to every day on a very, very high frequency. I mean, we have the ambition of reaching 20 million visits per day. We got very close to that already at the beginning of this year, where we had approximately 600 million visits within a single month. And to put that in perspective, like take Amazon as probably a platform we all use on a very regular basis as well. During the regular season of last year, we managed to exceed the monthly visits on Bild versus Amazon by more than 100 million in Germany. What that means is that people come to us on a higher frequency than to Amazon in Germany. And I think that is probably the one asset we have also in competition with those platforms. And therefore, the idea that we follow the audiences is in theory a good one. In practice, I think it has to be the other way around. We need to be so good that people still, or even better so, again come to us. And I think that's our ambition.
Yeah, I totally connect to that destination part. So that's, I think, really something that will make the difference in the future.
Yeah, and you might get the debate you wanted, Adib. Yeah. So I agree, but I'm also going to disagree. So that is just incredible. Being in that position against Amazon, social platforms, or what have you, it's a very different story in the U.S. And, you know, we talked about kind of Business Insider's roots and how we've grown, which very much started as a we'll meet you wherever you are approach and strategy. And for a long time, that served us incredibly well because we're able to find more folks and readers and serve them. And the part that I 100% agree with, and we are moving towards very rapidly here at Business Insider, is really being for a very specific audience, serving them incredibly well, providing value there, and becoming a destination, a daily routine for them. So important. But I do think that figuring out how to continue to find your audience in different ways, because they have so many options, because there are different, more insular, you know, audiences in different areas, is part of it. So you need to kind of bring the best of both strategies together. I think otherwise, obviously speaking for the States, you're not going to reach all the people that you need to reach. And connecting it back to our conversation around polarization, I think that feeds into potentially a problem if you're too insular in certain ways. So to me, it's really both, and figuring out how they fit together in your strategy is important. But absolutely, moving towards a destination, moving towards a routine, being a daily routine is important. And I know I said our top priority at Business Insider is innovation, but it really execution around this, becoming a destination, this routine is something that we talk about every single day.
Goldie, where do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, my immediate reaction when you asked the question was, well, of course, you know, you want to be responsive to your audience and be. But, you know, I do agree with Claudius as well, because I think that it's more about the fact that the platforms, I would say, do not have our best interests in mind. Right. I think the challenge we have is that it's become very clear that I believe that for media organizations, for news media organizations to survive, that direct relationship with the audience is of paramount importance, because the platforms, at the end of the day, if you just hand that relationship over to somebody else, then you are putting your sort of future and destiny in the hands of a third party. I do want us to actively be delivering our journalism in many different ways to be as useful to our audience as possible. But I think ultimately we have to get better at building that direct relationship so that we can build sustainable businesses.
Caro, you're the one with the most platforms. Well, at least in-house. At least in-house. So what do you think? Is it because, I would say, the provocative way to ask you this question is, you are following the audience maybe more than the others, given your position.
Not really, I think. So for us, it's absolutely clear that we need to be destinations. We got a bit more destinations. So, I mean, we got broadcast TV, so it's absolutely clear that we want to get the people at the linear TV at the moment. But as well, we use a lot of our content on YouTube, yes. But the main source for our revenue in television is broadcast. And when we use social media for Develt, it's absolutely clear that we want to catch the people to get to our website and to subscribe. And that's as well what we see. The best stickiness we have with users is if they have downloaded our app. And I mean, that's what you see. So if you are close to the people and our subscribers then became part of our world club, so they got a kind of a membership and they can have chats with our journalists and we do video talks with them and all that. So that really drives us to engagement and get them as a real close contact to our brand. So when we do other channels and when we use that, it's always on purpose and not an accident.
Can I would also say that I think, you know, I mean, what I, in some ways, like, I think what I am envious of is that if you think about, you know, we're storytellers, right? At the end of the day, and, you know, the three main ways you tell a story is, you know, written word, audio, and video. And so to me, because you have multiple platforms, you have the competency. I mean, I think for an organization like Politico, our core competency is the written word. And I think having a broadcast television station forces you to then have that competency in video or brings that to the organization. And I think having, you know, all of that under one umbrella, I think is a huge asset and benefit.
Of course, you can also find us on social media, on LinkedIn and on Instagram. You can find these links in the show notes, as well as links to our four media brands, Business Insider, Bild, Politico, and Welt. Stay tuned for the third part of this episode, in which we will discuss disrupting the media market. What have our four CEOs learned from mistakes that the industry made in the past? What's the next big thing in media? If you enjoyed this podcast, we'd love a like or a positive review. And if you have any suggestions or questions, please write to us at otr@axelspringer.com. We will hear you next time here on The Record.